Filmmaker Cindy L. Abel is here with Colonel Patsy Thompson and Barbara Brass to talk about their documentary Surviving the Silence and give us their spin on our LGBTQ issues. Hi, Cindy, Patsy, and Barbara.
Hi.
Hello.
Tell us about Surviving the Silence.
Well, first and foremost, Surviving the Silence is a love story that reveals unknown history. And so throughout the movie, we tell the story of two women in love, Colonel Patsy Thompson and Barbara Brass, and how they played a part in shaping military history.
This is Barbara. One of the reasons that I felt that we needed to share this story, because it is so significant, the backstory to history, a history-making lesbian who came out in the late 80s, and nobody knew this backstory. Nobody, even she hardly knew it until a few years later. So I thought it was time for the world to know, and we had an opportunity to share our story at our local community college for their Gay Pride Days. We ended up being the keynote speakers and turned our lives down another path where we are enjoying getting the word out. That was my feeling, my idea, my need to get this word out that we are all human beings living on this planet together, and we need to find a way to coexist in peace and love. And sharing history as well as sharing personal stories, to me, is the best way to do it.
And this film has helped us to do that, to share our stories not only with friends, but with family and neighbors and that.
And now the world.
Yeah.
What was your inspiration for telling this story?
Well, I was so fortunate. I was able to be in the audience the first time that they ever shared their story publicly, and I immediately fell in love with their love story. It's hard enough to make relationships last, right? But when people on top of that have to pretend they're not really together, I was just fascinated. How does that work, and how does it work for decades? And then, as I learned about the unknown part of history, how Colonel Thompson played a part behind the scenes in Colonel Campbell Meyer's expulsion, but especially her reinstatement and the role that that played in helping end Don't Ask, Don't Tell, I thought, wow, a love story that reveals history? How could I resist that? And so now, as we approach the 10th anniversary of the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, it really offers an opportunity to correct military history and to really show the complete story, you know, the story behind the story that's still unknown by many people.
Curly, do you want to add anything?
Well, I feel honored that I was able to be a part of this story, and it wasn't something I wanted to do. You know, in fact, I had refused to go to Washington State to take Colonel Kammermeier's rank and to set the board that kicked her out. But then she asked for me, and then I said, okay, well, I can't say no to her because she was one of my best nurses when I was at the Pentagon.
And that made all the difference. My wife, Colonel Pat Thompson, the president of that board, changed the course of history. And it took a long time for her to understand that and heal from the pain of the board, and also to realize that she was the one person who made all the difference in the world, and nobody else would have done as much or would have done it as well.
This is Pat. Colonel Kammermeier and I had so much in common. We were both nurses, both colonels. And so, you know, when I had to look her in the eye and take her rank, it was one of the most difficult things I'd ever had to do. But it was my job to do that.
In our film, Mary Newcomb, who is Colonel Greta Kammermeier's attorney, talks about knowing that the outcome of the trial would be an expulsion because there was no other way around it. She was also developing a plan looking ahead for civil trials for when they would appeal. And so in our film, she talks about the importance that Colonel Thompson played and how she managed the process at each stage, and really credits her with setting up the victory in the civil trials.
What do you hope to accomplish with this film?
Well, for me, as the filmmaker, I know that we really need stories right now that remind us of what's possible and shows that love, you know, fierce love, like not the romantic, squishy, lovely, soft kind that we all want, but fierce love, the kind that Barb and Pat have shared over the decades, really can win. And we need to really focus on that. And in addition to educating about history, It also inspires us by showing how one woman, Pat Thompson, created a way quietly from behind the scenes where it seemed that there was none. And I think our film can really help bridge the gap between so many of us by highlighting our stories. And as Barbara mentioned, that's the way that we create change, is to share our personal stories. And that's a way to bridge the divide that is between so many of us right now, especially when we involve politics and we involve religion. And it's a way for non-LGBTQ folks to be able to relate to the experience. It's really universal to all of us of struggling when we want to build a fulfilling life.
Colonel Patsy or Barbara, do you want to add something to that?
Well, I think I said it earlier that the education and the eye-opening awareness that people can see from our film that depicts our lives, that they will understand how important it is to be who you are and to fight for who you are, which means, to me, it means everybody who's in that category of marginalized, wherever, whoever it is, and there are plenty of categories. So the people, I think, get the most out of it. They may not see it, unfortunately, but what I'm hoping for is people who are our fierce allies and activists in our community. They have tried to share with those folks who would probably never see this film or know this story, and they're making inroads for us, which to me is just another way of getting the word out and sharing the story and changing people's hearts and minds to the positive.
This is Pat. We have done a lot of speaking engagements, especially in our own community and even into the Bay Area, where we've spoken at churches and colleges and any type of organization such as SMUD Electric here in our area. We love telling our story. We love getting it out there because we always get good feedback from people who have not heard our story before. And so we know there are a lot of people that can relate to this story, but this is our story and we don't mind telling it.
And I don't think that we are always preaching to the choir, but we've never gotten any pushback or negative responses from anybody ever. So I think people are listening and hearing and maybe understanding and letting it sink into their being that what we're trying to get across. And I feel really good about that.
In addition to them sharing the sacrifices that they went through and that many others in the military and not had to go through in order to survive as LGBTQ folks, in addition to sharing that history, it also helps understand what's happening today and the impact of what we see happening today. Like, for example, Barbara Brass, you know, her parents both, each of them survived the Holocaust. And so I know that, you know, now she has a particular perspective, knowing that history, about what is happening today and the potential for what could come if we don't get our act together. So maybe, Barb, you want to talk a little bit about that?
Oh, my goodness. That hit me the minute I heard the illegal occupant of the current White House announce his candidacy. I saw that was my Hitler coming through in my life. And whether he had won or not, he had already sown seeds of hatred and destruction throughout our country, if not farther. And that, to me, was the beginning of what happened to my family and millions of others in World War II. My grandfather knew in the 30s, late 20s, when first Hitler came to power, that this was a time to get out of Germany. And everybody said, oh, it's going to be okay. You know, these things have happened all the time, and there's always anti-Semitism and that kind of thing. But he knew, and I also knew. I also knew right away. And I knew that the possible path that could happen with this illegal occupant of the White House was just exactly where we're going now, except for the cover of pandemic or the actual, distraction of pandemic, which changed our world so definitely. So, yeah, I was motivated early, early on. And when the election happened, I was grief-stricken, angry. I mean, basically, I was born angry anyway, so that was not new, but I decided I had to do something definite, and I started a resistance group right away. So that went on until the pandemic. There are still vestiges of it. People still want to get out there, but now we've got, in California, we have smoke and ash. We're in a hellstorm here, so fires are everywhere.
How are you all dealing with COVID-19, social distancing, and stay-at-home orders, especially with the upticks on the virus throughout the country?
This is Pat. I have COPD, so I'm confined to the house and our property here. And I don't mind that as long as I can stay healthy. We have our gym equipment in the house, and so I just got through doing the treadmill for 30 minutes. So, you know, it makes me feel better, be able to exercise, and so I'm doing okay that way.
Oh, and I am very protective. Yes, she is. Even though I'm in the high-risk age group, I definitely get out with all the protection I can muster, and you would think I'm taking a face trip sometimes with what I put on to go grocery shopping. But we are careful. We follow the local and the state instructions and limit ourselves as much as possible. That's kind of what we're good at, is following smart instructions. And California has been okay with that. You know, our governor has pushed for certain things. I mean, we're having a whole lot of flare-ups and spikes and this and that. But our particular county in California has just gotten off the watch list. So that's a good thing. And I've been making face masks, fabric face masks, from the first days of this. And I thought, even the time when they said, we need face masks for medical people, I thought, I can make some to send out wherever locally if they need them, or send them somewhere. But when I realized that this thing was not going to be gone in 2 weeks, it wasn't a hoax, like some fools have said, I thought, I'm going to just keep making masks because I think we will need them. And on top of that, I think that if people are wearing masks like they should, we may not have a seasonal flu season as bad as it could possibly be. I really think that what we're doing in fighting and preventing and working to prevent COVID is also going to keep some of us from getting the flu, from getting colds, from things that are transmitted very similarly if we keep following those directions. So I think masks are kind of fun and exciting and preventive, and I love making them because it gives me a purpose and a project, and my creativity kind of just zooms out of me that way. So it's really good for me.
For me, I basically stay home unless I'm going out for a very specific purpose, like going to the grocery store or going hiking. And when I do go to the grocery store, places like that, I have a whole collection of masks, including some Barbara Brass originals that she has actually been selling, getting donations for our film by providing those to folks, which is fantastic, but also by hiking. Yeah, I try to do 2 to 3, 5, 6 mile plus hikes every week, and it's what's good for my mental and emotional health, and it gives me some way of being socially distant but still being able to connect with other people, and also get the grounding that comes with just simply being outside in nature.
With LGBTQ teens already 4 times more likely to attempt suicide than their heterosexual peers after facing bullying incidents, what advice would you have for these kids, especially dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic and having to be homeschooled at this point?
What worries me about LGBTQ teens and children having to stay home is whether or not their families are supportive and embracing. And in that case, that might actually be a break from bullying. But the worst case scenario, of course, and it's not that isolated, is if their family members are not supportive. And that is just heartbreaking and terrifying to me. And so my advice would be, if you have one person who you can trust, who gets you, stay connected to that person. And if you don't have that person or you want additional support, there's a great organization, the Trevor Project, and that is such a really valuable service to the LGBTQ community.
And Pat and I are very involved with PFLAG. We're connected with 2 chapters, and one is about 20 miles from our home in Auburn, California, and the other we are now able to connect with via Zoom every month in the Central Valley of California, where we would never be able to go. attend a live meeting. So the Zoom under COVID now has been so helpful for us. But we were on a Zoom meeting with that group last week, and they were talking about just that. And there are so many. The Trevor Project is wonderful. There are LGBTQ centers all over the country. And I think CenterLink is possibly a way to get connected with LGBTQ centers. And everything they have is available online. PFLAG is online. PFLAG is for parents and friends and families of the LGBTQ plus community, which is an organization that has been around getting close to 50 years, and it is all about support, all about advocacy, and all about education, especially kids, because they are so keyed into everything virtual that they can connect up with PFLAG or LGBTQ centers around the country and get the help they need. The people that were on that last call with PFLAG were an LGBTQ center person and a mental health provider, and they were wonderful. It seems that they're setting up all kinds of virtual programs, especially for young people and others of every age, that can be helpful via their phone or their computer, and I think they're saving lives that way.
How can people get information about Surviving the Silence?
The easiest way is to go to our website, www.survivingthesilence.com. And there they can also link to our Facebook page as well as to our Twitter page.
Is there a question you wish people would ask you?
The number one thing I would want people to ask is, what can we do? We're in this mess. How do we get out of it? And the number one answer is vote. And get other people to go and vote as well. Find a way.
Good answer. We lift our glass to that, and we work towards that. We've been writing postcards, letters, making phone calls.
Oh, my goodness. We've been busy.
And we have a fence that faces out to our street where we live, and there are all kinds of signs, and I put a big vote sign in neon pink, so the people who come by our house at least see it. So we're doing the best we can under the circumstances without being able to go door to door, which we used to do.
Oh, and that's what I was looking forward to doing this year.
Do you have a favorite quote, a mantra to get you through these difficult times?
For me, at different times in my life, I've struggled with depression, and I needed to know that I still mattered to the universe and things weren't always going to be so hard. And so I started looking for a daily reminder, you know, a smile from a stranger, someone holding a door, coin on the sidewalk, something unexpected that just would poof, appear out of nowhere. And I came to call those moments of grace. And so at times right now and other times of anxiety, I remind myself to look for the moment of grace. That means something unexpected, something that I didn't earn, something that is just a sign from the universe, if you will, that I'm here. Things are always going to be bad. To look for that spark that reminds me that there is still light, no matter how dark things might appear to be.